What's this? Another Owl House episode? That's right. We're discussing the second half of season 2. No content warnings for this one, but there are two tired podcasters, many wild theories, a slug reaction, politics, and a surprise appearance by helicopters and fireworks. I haven't spoken to you in forever.
Yeah, Val, it's not like I spend like half my free time with you. Jeez, it's like we do a podcast together or something.
Wow. Right for the throat and heart. Okay.
I mean, I enjoy it. Like, yeah. I would have found an excuse to ditch you yesterday afternoon if I didn't enjoy hanging out with you.
That's very fair.
Yeah. See, there's your evidence. Just in case you ever feel any, like, imposter syndrome about our friendship, remember that I did not ditch you.
Okay. We'll keep that in mind.
Even though you were like, I could just go wander around. I was like, no, you don't need to do that, Val. Don't need to go wander around. Okay. Let's get started before this rainstorm interrupts us.
Let's get started.
Yes. So, welcome to In Media Les, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
And today we will be discussing the second season of The Owl House by Dana Terrace. We've talked about The Owl House before in episode 1. Isn't Lumity a Hoot was the name of that episode.
Oh yeah, that was our first episode.
This is the first episode. So we're coming back to it for season 2. And okay, so I just finished it today. Like the tail end of the season. And I have thoughts.
Okay.
But first, maybe we should give a summary. So, like,
I do want to clear this up real quick. Okay. We did the first season and first half of season 2.
Oh, that's true.
Right, because they had that big hiatus.
Hiatus.
I always say hiatus.
You said hiatus.
I always do that. Don't worry about it. I'm going to deal with it in post.
Okay. Don't. Okay. Just leave in the fact that you said hiatus.
Okay.
Because we hate it when they take a break. That's, I don't know. Oh, God.
What's the summary?
So the summary of, I guess, the second season is, I think it's fair to say it's principally concerned with the Emperor Belos and his objective, which is to make it to the human realm. Spoiler alert is that he is actually Philip, what is his name, Weatherby? Oh, God.
Whitaker?
Whitaker.
Yeah.
Whitabane? Whitabane. We got there.
Is it?
Philip Whitabane.
Okay.
Yeah, he basically doesn't care about mages. He actually hates them. He's a witch hunter. He just wants to... God, there's going to be the sound of justice purring in the background. I apologize. You can get some cat purr ASMR while you listen to our podcast. So the Emperor is trying to basically build a door to the human realm, and he puts that plan into action, which culminates, well, there's a few different elements. The Golden Guard Hunter, it's unclear to me what Hunter exactly is, because it's implied that he's something that was created by the Emperor.
Yeah, I feel like they're clones.
Yeah, is he a clone, or... Because he was called something called, like, a Grimwalker?
Mm-hmm.
But we don't really know what a Grimwalker is yet. Yeah. I'm sure it's going to be important. And especially at the end. Maybe we'll talk about what happens at the end later. But anyway, so basically the Emperor is trying to get Titan's blood to open the door. Luce is trying to get Titan's blood so that she can make her own door. There's a lot of conflicts. It culminates in the Emperor's plan, which is to use the Day of Unity, which is a solar eclipse, to drain all the power from all the wizards who've been assigned to a coven using their coven tattoo, I guess, as a channeling device. It will kill all of them and give him what he, like, the power he needs to operate the door, I guess. But he also has the Titan. It wasn't quite clear to me what the, like, power drain was exactly used for.
So After I watched it, I've talked about it with my cousin who also really, really loves the show.
Okay.
And that's what I thought, but he said that he didn't really need it. I think that he just wanted to kill everyone while leaving. Okay. And that makes a lot more sense to me now, once I've thought about it, because he does hate witches. Yes. Right? So it seemed like the ultimate, like, now that I'm getting out of here, I'm gonna salt the earth, get rid of everything I hate here.
Okay, I thought it was powering the door.
That's partially what I thought. I don't know. It might be both.
I don't know. Because he said at first only two people could make it through, but then, like, Luce and all her friends make it through. So, like, it felt like the door had some extra power.
Well, he said that because he didn't want the collector free, right? He was lying constantly to them because he never planned to free the collector, but he had to keep that, like, going in order for the collector to help him figure out how to do all this stuff.
Yeah, and to mention, the collector is a very, very powerful being that we don't know too much about, but was trapped in some kind of prison by the Titan, and yeah, it's so powerful that when the collector was released, they were able to very easily, or after he was released, it's he, him pronouns for the collector. Mm-hmm. After the collector's released, he easily, like, just made a smear out of Emperor Belos, like, just creamed him. He just turned into a big pile of green goo. Mm-hmm. And then, like, was rewriting reality and, like, moved the moon in the sky. So, like, an ultra-powerful being. Yeah, that's the collector. And we don't really know what the collector's game is, but he does seem to be obsessed with games.
I think he just wants to play games, yeah. I think that's the game. There's no, like, greater thing to him, which is kind of scarier, I think.
That's yeah.
It's like when we have Jinx in Arcane, and she's just chaotic. He's very similar.
Yep. So the collector is kind of this force of chaos. What were you saying before you mentioned the collector? I just totally got spaced out.
Hmm?
You were saying something, and then I said, like, let's explain what the collector is.
We were talking about how, like, if he needed the Unity spell or not.
Right. I think, I don't know. I think that maybe the, I don't know.
We're both tired.
This is such a mess to do this late. It's so funny the way how different the energy is when we're doing this at 10 p.m. instead of 11 a.m. Okay, let me collect my thoughts here.
Boo. Absolutely boo.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. So we know Philip has been talking to the collector for a long time. The collector taught the Emperor how to do the draining spell, and that the collector wants to play games. And then at the end, the collector says, like, oh, or like King comes up and says, let's play Owl House. And so I think what the collector is doing, just to totally switch gears, I think what's going to happen is that he's going to create a world in which everything is the way it was prior to season one. And they're going to be, like, trapped in a loop of, like, playing this game that is the Owl House. Because it's, like, a meta commentary for, like, the show itself. And the collector is kind of, like, a meta commentary for the show runners. So Dana Terrace. And my thought is, okay, so the collector is just going to want to, like, live in this perfect dollhouse world where everyone is just playing along to this game of the Owl House. And that's why it was so important that all the, like, protagonists, well, I guess aside from, like, Ida, and Hootie and a few, and King, they get stuck. Okay, I'm explaining this so terribly. This is the worst summary I've ever done. But basically, at the end, Luce and her friends, and I am now blanking on every single one of their names because that's how this goes right now.
Willow, Gus, Hunter,
Yes.
And Luz and Amity, of course.
And Amity are all stuck in the human realm. Everyone else is in the demon world. So I think those stuck in the demon realm are going to be stuck in this, like, pantomime of pre-season one Owl House. And therefore, season three, which I looked up, is going to be 3 44-minute episodes, which is silly.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
We'll get into the whole Disney thing before too long, I'm sure. But, like, so I think that it's going to be about them finding their way back, and then they come back, and it's just like the world is in this weird play state of, like, everyone's pretending like they're just going about normal things, and they have to, like, break this. And it's going to be really interesting because the Collector, I don't know, doesn't seem... I mean, like, the reveal has always been on this show that most things are not evil. They're just very misinformed.
Yeah.
I think Emperor Belus was... Emperor. Yeah, I think he is the first character, I feel like, who was introduced, who was just clearly like, no, he's just awful. And, you know, some of the people who work for his coven have been pretty awful. The plant lady, what's her name?
I know who you're talking about. I do not remember, but is Rain's teacher or something. That's an interesting take. I can see that happening.
Yeah.
I haven't really thought about what to expect from season three that much. I know they're going to do a pretty good job. I mean, every episode in the second half of season two was
Terra
really...
Snapdragon.
It was really hitting all the points. I don't know, I liked every single episode.
Yes. I feel like overall this season was a lot stronger than season one. I think season one wasn't bad. It was just like very classic season one of an animated show series.
Which is ridiculous why they canceled it.
Yeah.
It's aggravating because they have this weird system where the show comes out one episode at a time, right? But they don't put it up on their streaming network when the episodes come out. They wait till like 5 or 6 of them are out and then put them up there in batches. There's fireworks outside my house. Awesome.
Which is so weird. It's like Korra-esque shenanigans. It's like they're trying to like purposefully hurt the show. It just reminds me of like the shenanigans that they played with Korra. Basically, Nickelodeon was purposely, it felt like, trying to hurt the show.
They really were. They took it off air. They didn't advertise it. They
switched it to like Friday nights or something at one point.
Yeah,
it's just like everything they could do, Nickelodeon could do. And it feels like Disney is doing this. So now we're getting to the Disney thing. So it's impossible to discuss Owl House right now without talking about, you know, what's going on at Disney. And Dana Terrace has been very publicly upset with what Disney has been up to, leading
really
to some
ridiculous.
Very public feuds.
Yeah. Not only public, but like she put it in the cartoon, which is hilarious. But regardless of that, like, this show is not a failed show, right?
Yeah.
I only ever hear when talking about Disney shows, like Disney cartoons for kids, not Star Wars or all of those, like, Marvel shows, but for kids. All I hear about is Owl House and Amphibia.
Yeah.
I don't hear about any other TV show on their network. So it's not as if it was a failing show or anything. I highly, highly doubt it.
Yeah.
It makes absolutely no sense. And I don't know why they made that decision. I can't even begin to guess why they made that decision. But from the perspective of a business, it's just such a wild one. Like, I know they can throw away money. And they do very often. But usually they do it to make shows that are not great, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they've got all those ridiculous... I can't even think of any of them. The like, Disney Channel specials you remember from when you were a kid of, like, whatever junk they had on there. And then you've got a show like Owl House, which is amazing, and has won a bunch of awards and has universal acclaim. And I don't know, like, what the metrics are in terms of popularity, but, like, I've met, like, 6 kids, like, in the past few months, and all of them have talked to me about Owl House. Like, it is very popular among children. It's not just weird adults like Val and me who are watching the show. Like, there's kids watching it who really enjoy it. Like, yeah. One of the kids I run Dungeons and Dragons for, she apparently, like, her mom was a little, like, well, she was up late last night watching Owl House, like, kind of, like, a little, like, chastising about it, like, should have gone to bed, but you decided to stay up watching Owl House. So, like, this is a show that's popular with kids. I can't imagine it's doing poorly. So, like, why is Disney trying to kill it? And the answer is probably because they're worried that, like, if it gets too much attention as this very, like, queer positive show, they're worried about a conservative backlash.
And therefore, which they have been doing with every show for, like, over a decade now. So I feel like they would probably have seen the results of that at this point. And if,
well, they always toe the line, though. They always put these little things in, like the kiss in Star Wars, or the, you know, character in the Avengers mentioning vaguely that he went on a date with a man. Or
there's,
you know,
a, like, kiss in Star Wars.
Yeah, there.
Oh, the slug thing? That was actually a thing.
The slug thing?
The slug reaction meme? Is that what we're talking about? You have no idea what I'm talking about.
I have no idea. Wait, I don't need to go. Star Wars slug.
How do you not know that meme? It's that slug-looking guy who's, like, squinting.
Oh, that.
Yeah.
This must be, like, a Tumblr thing, because I've seen it vaguely, like, maybe once or twice. I had no idea this was a thing.
It's been everywhere.
Also, the slug is named Cloud. Claude?
Claude the Slug. That's a wild name for a Star Wars character.
Well, Star Wars has the weirdest character. Never look up what the name of the band in the cantina, what style of music they play. Don't ever look it up.
Old news.
You know that? You know it?
Of course. But yeah, like, I'm literally going through Disney Plus right now, and there are no other animated cartoons that I recognize. There's, like, Big City Greens. It's not a very big cartoon. It's fairly unknown.
Yeah.
Everything else is for children, like, very, very young children, like morning shows. But literally, there's maybe 3 or 4 cartoons on their network that are ongoing and recent, and I've never heard of them. Owl House I've heard of from different people. It's a show that people watch. It's really, really strange. I know we've been talking about this for like 10 minutes and we have no answers. Yeah. And no one's gonna give us answers because, like, you know. But it's just aggravating, truly.
It's the same thing that happened with Korra, where it's just like, you've got this great show, it's got universal acclaim, it has an audience. Why are you shooting yourself in the foot? And the only explanation in my mind is that it's got too much queerness, and they're worried about, like, Disney. Let's think about what Disney has done lately. Like, there was the don't say gay bill in Florida, and at first Disney refused to take a side on it until there were literally, like, walkouts at Disney corporate offices
because all of the people who actually make the show are queer.
Yes. And Dana Terrace, like, did, like, a live stream, and there's all this stuff about it. And finally Disney came out and said, okay, well, we're against the don't say gay bill, but it had, like, already passed into law at that point, or was about to, like, it was on the governor's desk. And then state of Florida took a bunch of steps to punish Disney. And so this is the line that Disney thinks it has to toe, where it has to, like, they know all their creators and young people, they want characters that are diverse and represent a variety of, you know, backgrounds and sexualities and orientation and everything, and gender representation. People want that because that's the experience that people have in life, and they want to see characters that represent them. But then you have, like, first of all, you know, a lot of Disney is in Florida, which is very conservative these days. They don't want to piss off the governor too much and get cracked down on and get their, like, tax stuff messed up, I guess. And so rather than like taking a side. And then like also I think there's a lot of like, I don't know, Disney worries about like losing suburban moms and like, you know, like because they're the ones who pay for their kids to have Disney Plus. And so like Disney,
I don't believe that for a second.
But you could, okay, it's not about whether this is true or not. It's about whether Disney perceives this to be true or not. And for a long time, Disney's bread and butter has been those like suburban moms who maybe aren't like, they're not conservative necessarily. They're not liberal either. They're kind of maybe somewhere moderate, and they just want their kids watching like good, wholesome shows, and they don't want anything controversial. And Disney thinks if they make anything that's like too out there, too many queer people or something, that's going to be controversial. And then the moms are going to be like, oh, well, I don't want my kids watching this controversial show. Because even if they don't, I mean, because, you know, if you're a mom, maybe you don't have time to sit down and watch everything that your child's going to watch, but you want to know that they're watching something, you know, that's not bad for them. But if they hear like, oh, it's controversial, they might just say like, I don't know anything about that Owl House, but I heard it was bad, so I'm not gonna let little Timmy watch it. And it's just, maybe that, again, this is not about like what's true, this is about how Disney might see this, and that's what I think is going on there. This is just my conspiracy theory. I don't have a ton of evidence for this, it's just like my theory.
I feel like it's everyone's theory at this point. Terrace herself said that they didn't even like let her talk about it with them. They just told her it was canceled, and that's it. That's the most aggravating thing. It's like, the animation studios, they're all located in California. I've never met a straight person from California who was an artist. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I highly, highly doubt it that their employees are not that diverse. Because from all the shows that we've seen coming out that are really, really big, I'm talking about Gravity Falls and stuff, right? Everyone always talked about how diverse the cast and crew were. So it's really, really strange to me that like a company like that would keep... It's not strange to me. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
It's actually upsetting that a company would just like go after its employees like that. Really strange. I know, well, they have
it's,
like,
it's just, you have to keep in mind, it might be the cast and crew is very queer and, you know, a lot of allies, but that doesn't mean that the like management or the marketing people or, you know, like those more corporate positions are the people who make the big decisions. Probably not as much compared to the cast and crew.
I would still bet that a pretty decent chunk of them are.
I don't know.
But maybe not like the top.
Yeah. I feel like once you get, the more corporate you get, not to race people, there are queer people everywhere in every kind of role. But in my experience, the corporate kind of side of things, the people who work in accounting and market research and whatnot, tend to be a bit more on the conservative side of things. And, you know, and then keep in mind, Disney is also like a publicly traded company. So they've got a board of directors. So it's a bunch of almost always overwhelmingly rich old white guys in suits who are making, you know, the big decisions for like the trajectory of the company.
Which is weird because that's a show that would be making the money.
Yeah, but again, people are not always rational actors. That's what's important. Like, even if the show is making the money, they might not.
That's very true.
I just think about,
but it's
like,
it's upsetting that money doesn't speak.
Just imagine you've got an old, you go to like a boardroom full of, you know, like the Disney execs, and it's probably like, I mean, I'm sure there's some representation, but I'm sure it's mostly like old white dudes in their 50s and 60s, and you tell them like, so this is our animated series that has a bunch of queer characters and people of color and also witchcraft. And just imagine like trying to sell that to them and then be like, and then having them ask like, okay, did you just want to make a show that's going to piss off every conservative Christian in the country? Like, you can totally see like what they're, I mean, it's an awful perspective, but that's their perspective. And that's what you have to, that's like what we're up against, essentially.
Yeah. As, like, an immigrant Jew from, like, New York, I did not have many experiences with super conservative Christian people.
Yeah, I grew up in the heartland.
But from the ones that I did meet, the ones in New York, they're usually kind of fairly chill. So I don't know. It's hard for me to gauge. Yeah.
Not always. I mean, there are a lot of chill Christians out there who rule.
I think mostly chill.
Yeah.
Except for, like, there's always the very, very loud person who no one has the energy to deal with. And I think that's hurting most of society in America.
That's a good way to put
we got
it,
yeah. very political very quickly.
Yeah, so this is our political episode. I don't know if you knew this, but Val and I have certain political beliefs. Surprise,
it's
surprise.
It's not even political. It's more of like we're gays in New York.
This is true.
We're not the most subtle about it. Anyway, let's get back to the cartoon, I feel like. Let's talk about
Want to talk some stylistic things about the second season. Mm-hmm. One thing I liked that I was thinking about as I was kind of finishing it up today was the one thing I will say, like, the one thing that, like, turned me off at first. I don't think I mentioned this during our season 1/2 and first half episode, but something that, like, at first, I found the art style a little very generic Disney, it felt like. Like, not in a bad way. Like, it's really well done, but I didn't feel like it had its own style quite as much. But I feel like starting in season 2, they really started taking it in some interesting directions. And especially a lot of the characters who were introduced in season 2 and their outfits and... You know, I feel like they got much more creative in putting, like, Luce and the Owl Lady and stuff in very different outfits. Like, I was actually very impressed by how many different outfits, because I know, like, for animators, like, putting the character in a different outfit is a lot of work, because...
Yeah, it's all new references. They can't reuse frames.
But they did it so much. Like, I feel like that was a big change in season 2. It's just like Luce feels like she's wearing a different outfit almost every single episode, which was impressive. And then the designs of the characters that show up. Like, I thought the Emperor was super cool looking in his different forms, too. Like, the monster form was really cool. The Collector was neat. The Golden Guard Hunter, I thought, was great. And I can't not mention my baby Steve.
Steve.
I love Steve. Just to mention, Steve is this character. He was part of the coven, and then he has kind of a nervous breakdown, I guess. Mm-hmm.
A lot of guards really turned around in this second half of season 2.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing that also we should talk about, is like how a lot of the characters get a lot more depth. But I love Steve's outfit, and I think it's like
the
motorcycle, and then he's wearing this cool, like, he's still wearing the, like, guards thing, but then, like, this leather jacket and a shirt that says Steve, which is really brilliant in a way that, like, makes his name memorable. Mm-hmm.
He was at Lilith's party for when she got a new job, which is hilarious. That's when I first noticed him, and, like, she talked to him, I think, at some point. And it was very funny to see him come back and be just like this guy who had a crisis, realized that he doesn't want to be where he's at, and just like goes on a road trip with this little guy.
I also like there's that scene where he sees that old couple and he starts crying, and I felt so bad for Steve. I was like, oh, Steve. Yeah. So Steve rules. Anyway.
Yeah. A lot of the guards also... While talking about the animation, a lot of the guards look super freaky and weird.
Yeah.
Because they're all monstrous. And I really, really, really liked that, because we got a lot of them in those hawk masks, I guess. And now we actually see behind them more frequently than in season 1. And we see that all of them are like that. And I don't know why, but it was very pleasing to the eye.
Yeah. Just that diversity among them was... Mm-hmm. It was really nice. Yeah, and that's the other thing. Along with that style, I feel like a lot of the characters who were just a little more one-dimensional in season 1 got played up a bit more in terms of, like, personality and giving them some depth, like Kikimora.
Yeah.
I feel like you see a lot more about her as a character.
She's like she's a two-faced person, but oh, she's such a good character.
Yeah.
Like, we know she's always going to betray them in the end.
Yeah.
But dang, does she do it well.
The Warden, Warden Wrath, I think his name is, I feel like.
Does he come back?
Yeah, he fights in that duel that Amity enters. I forget what it's called.
Oh, yeah, where her dad is, like, not letting her do it.
Yeah.
That's right.
And doesn't he just want to go on, I think that was in season one where he wanted to go on a date with Edith.
That was in the beginning. I think that was like episode one.
But I don't know. I just feel like seeing him some more was nice.
Yeah, he doesn't disappear. He's still in the world. It's just interesting.
There's more stuff going on with him.
I like Willow's development. She had a lot of it. It was super, super fun because I feel like we never got enough of her in the first season. And we were starting to get some of her in the first half of season two. But she really grew into her powers and herself in the second half. And it seems like she's got a little something-something with Hunter happening. Did you notice that?
Yeah, there's definitely a Hunter Willow ship. What would you call it? Wilter?
I have no idea.
Hunlow? I don't know.
Hopefully not that second one.
I think Wilter sounds better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
She definitely rescues him pretty often.
And there was a little blushing.
Very into it. There's, yeah. I love how they animate the blushing in this cartoon. First we had, before Amity and Luz were like canon, when we were first getting that, and Amity kept getting blushes and would blush with her whole face.
Yes.
And this season we had her dad do that. They have the same angry blush, which is adorable. But also when Hunter blushed, they like animated the tips of his ears to also blush, which I've never seen an animated show do that. That was kind of such a neat little detail.
Yeah.
I love when they make people blush on this show. It's really adorable.
It is really cute. It's really well done. I like that different characters blush different ways instead of just being like everyone's just like two red spots on their cheeks and done. But no, it's a little more complicated than that. I like that. Yeah, I mean, it just feels like they put a lot of thought and care into
the animators. Did a wonderful job. Truly amazing and very visible. I really hope that people see it because we definitely did.
Yeah, I feel like animation is one of those things where like, when it's bad, you kind of know. And when it's okay, you don't really notice. But then when it's really good, you also kind of take note of that. And this one's one of those times where you notice, like, it's really good.
I also find that when it's good, people tend to not see it as much because everything is working so well, they don't even notice it. But I think this show stands out enough in all those little individual decisions they make. For example, as you mentioned, the clothing and putting in all of those extra characters and giving them a personality that I had a really, really good time with it. And I keep saying that, but we keep reviewing a lot of animated stuff, but I truly am not a huge fan of animation.
Really?
Yeah. For some reason, for most of those shows, like, my brain just kind of gets bored and shuts down. And, like, I realize that I've been watching something that I haven't paid any attention to. But with this show, I was engaged the entire way.
It's hard to look away from this show. I think it also helps that every scene has a lot of detail going on as well. Like, that is another thing I think that happens in some animated shows is that, like, scenes can sometimes feel very empty, like it's just focused on the characters who are on screen and the background's just there for set dressing. But I feel like the scenes here were very beautifully done, and every scene kind of feels painterly, I guess is how I describe it. There's a lot of detail. There's just so much going on and so much to look at that you don't want to look, like, you don't want to sit there and play a game on your phone while you kind of half-heartedly pay attention. You want to be actively engaged in the show.
Yeah. So you know that joke where I think Ida and Luz are running away from something or towards someone, and Ida, I think she's the one that says something like, if we had another 30 adventures or something, 20 adventures, then maybe we can have a beach episode.
Yeah.
But we don't. So that shade and stuff, I felt like they actually got a lot of that sort of character development that we usually get in those filler episodes.
Yeah.
In amazingly well in the, what is it, 11 or 12 episodes they had right now.
Yeah.
We had so much just like individual character episodes.
Yeah.
Where we learned so many things about them. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Lily. Love her. Great job on her. She's awesome. She gives nothing in the first season. And then in the second one, she is a complete, like, sweetheart and nerd and historian.
Oh, she's such a dork, it turns out.
It's like, we got so much of her in the second half.
Yeah.
It was wonderful. Then we got Ida and Rain.
Their episode was so good.
It was so good. And not only did it show how they met and why their friendship is so strong and why they're like really into each other, they also used it as a way to explain how Rain is actually not being controlled by the coven.
Yeah.
That's masterful.
And also set up that awful Terra plant lady.
Yeah. But like, they, because the one singular good thing that came out of the show getting canceled is that they had to hustle to tell their story in the best, least time-consuming way. And I have no doubt that the three episodes we have left will be wonderful. But like, they've really, really trimmed all the excess, but made it feel like it was complete, like they weren't rushing. I don't know. Kudos to the writing team.
Sorry, there's a helicopter outside my window.
They're coming to get you.
Finally, they caught me.
It's Disney coming for us.
Disney's
they know that we're doing this. They will not let us release this episode.
Yeah, I heard you were disparaging us. The mouse hears all. The mouse sees all.
The poor mouse has been held hostage by that company for way too long. Mickey does not deserve this.
I mean, Mickey is that company. Haven't you watched those South Park episodes?
I don't watch South Park.
Oh, there's the whole there's episodes where, like, Mickey, as a stand-in for Disney, is just like this.
I'm sure, like, that Mickey business, has committed war
business
crimes.
Mobster type person. I don't know.
I'm anyway. Sure that he's done some bad stuff in the early iterations of his cartoons.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I have no doubt about it.
Oh, gosh. Early cartoons. Owl House.
Yes.
Owl House. Okay, is there anything you didn't like about this season?
I wanted a little bit more Hootie.
Okay.
Just, I know that he's always kind of there in the background, but I wanted something that was specifically his.
Yeah.
And we only, I think, got that once where he organized a date, but it was still not about him.
Yeah.
Even though he's not my favorite, I like the jokes he brings to the show, but if there's too much of him in an episode, I kind of usually get annoyed by it.
Yeah, I think that's what they're worried about, is too much Hootie.
But I would have liked, not an origin story, but maybe a little bit of that. I don't know.
Given that the fact that the third season, well, we know the Collector wants to play Owl House, I'm guessing Hootie might be a big part of that.
I sure hope so.
So if so, I think we might get some more info about Hootie's origins.
Yeah. What I do like is that they have a lot of stuff that they seed that kind of very obviously foreshadows things, but we're still so, like, cautious about it. For example, the Emperor. Everyone knew he was going to be that English dude from the story.
Philip Wittebane.
Yeah. But I think as the episodes were coming out, people were, like, so careful about saying that. Every post I've seen was like, I think it's definitely that dude.
it's the same voice actor. Like,
yeah.
No, it's so funny. According to this, different voice actor. Interesting.
It might have been the same voice actor where we see him in the past.
In the past version, is a different voice actor.
Oh, is it?
It's okay. So it's Alex Lothar is the voice actor for Philip Widdowbane. He was in the end of the F Word World. If you ever watched that,
nope.
And then Emperor Belos was Matthew Rhys Evans.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, wasn't the narration of the diary the same as the past version of him?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I thought you were talking about that.
No, I don't know what we're talking about now.
But anyway, like, I honestly think that maybe Edith's dad might be a Golden Guard, or was a Golden Guard at some point. He looks way too much like Hunter, and he has that palisman that is exactly Hunter's palisman, but a different color.
Interesting. I never thought about that. I didn't think about the father too much.
He was there very quickly.
Yeah, Del.
Yeah. At first, I actually thought that he was going to be the Emperor's brother.
Yeah. He even has, like, the face scar that's reminiscent of the Emperor's slash, in a way.
Yeah.
I can see that.
But we learned that the Emperor actually killed his brother.
Yeah.
Which is super sad. But yeah, I strongly suspect that he used to be a Golden Guard or something and managed to escape, just as Hunter did. But that scene when King goes down to get the Collector.
Yeah.
And sees just the piles and piles of skulls.
Yeah.
With the Golden Guard mask. That?
Yep.
That was like a really sad scene. Like, I did not expect for that to actually be, like, to actually make me react emotionally.
Yeah.
But for some reason, that really got me. I was horrified.
And we had gotten hints before that, like, about foreshadowing that you mentioned, that, like, there had been previous Golden Guards and he had killed all of them.
Yeah,
there have been hints for that in his memories.
Yeah, and then seeing it. Because I think the only other time we've seen it is in the Emperor's mind space.
Yeah.
But that was, you know, that was in his mind. And then seeing it for real in their world right there, discarded like that. I think that's like, was like, oh man, there it is. We knew it, but now we know it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I wonder how the Golden Guard, like, being a Grimwalker, and how, well, like, one theory of mine. So we know a little bit of Emperor Belos of Philip got on Hunter as he made his way to the human realm. We saw that little green glob of goo, you know, get on Hunter's jacket, I guess, as they entered the portal. So I wonder, can the Emperor take over somewhat like a Grimwalker? I wonder if that's going to be something that happens.
That could be interesting.
Yeah, like, is Hunter going to have to fight to stay who he is?
So I jokingly was talking about this with my cousin, and I'm very sure that Lu's mom is going to smack him with her slipper, just like she did that magic hoax dude who tried to capture that chimera demon girl that lives with the mom now.
Right.
I just really want that to happen.
That is totally going to happen, isn't it?
I don't know if it is, but I would love it. But also, I'm sure they're going to make it way more dramatic and it's going to hurt us emotionally.
Oh, no doubt. There's going to be a lot of emotional moments that cleave at our feelings.
I really like that they kept kind of revealing things to us about Amity's twins as well.
They got a lot more complicated
in
season two as well, whereas in season one they were just kind of
older siblings.
Yeah,
who were kind of mean to her, but in a loving way.
In season two, they're a lot more They're a lot more interesting. I like the reveal that, like, they're using illusion charms and they're actually very, like, awkward-looking teenagers.
Stuff. Yeah, that was awesome.
Oh, my God. That was a hilarious reveal that Edric in particular was just like, oh, my God.
With his little headband.
Yeah. I mean, Amira? Oh, gosh. I just watched the show. How can I not remember her name?
One of those is right. It's fine. They know who we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, hers was just like pimples, but man, his was like,
yeah,
he has the awkward like teenage mustache, the headband, the sweatpants. It was very good.
And we also know that he's really good at potions.
Yeah,
that was a very sweet moment. He helped Ida and King craft some. Their mother aggravates me so much. She's just such a bad person. And she doesn't love her kids. And she completely just disregards the twins. Which I think in some cases actually makes it better for them. Because she doesn't pay that much attention to them.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, she doesn't pay any attention to them. And then Amity is kind of like the person that she's putting a lot of pressure on. Because she's good at aberrations and would probably be the best to take over the business, but wow, is she a piece of work.
Yeah. Odalia, that's her name. She's awful, and she's even so awful to her own husband.
And has been for many years. And yeah. I really was mad at Amity's dad as well, because like he saw this happening. He just didn't see it happen because he's too into his work.
Yeah.
Like, him realizing that he doesn't spend enough time with his kids, for some reason, just made me so mad. Like, you had nothing stopping you. That's just who you are.
Yeah, he's very frustrating. Because he means well, but, like, I think he's like, evidence of the whole idea that, like, meaning well is not enough. You have to take action. And he does at the end.
Does not excuse that you're not making these decisions.
Yeah.
Especially for a big family.
Yeah, especially in, like, letting your wife abuse your children.
Yeah. I think also it's such a big contrast because we have, Willow on a smaller case because we don't really see her parents, but we know she's from, like, a really happy family. And then we have Ida taking care of Luz and King.
Yeah.
And we've had such a good representation of a parent that's really trying. And then we have the mom back home as well, right? We have these two examples of parents who are really, really trying.
Yes.
And I think all the other parents we've met so far have been truly terrible. Ida's mom, awful.
Yep.
Amity's mom, real bad. I feel like there was another one in there that I'm missing. Oh, well, I guess Rain's mentor, super duper bad. Then we have King's kind of family, turns out to be a cult who is not his family and are just trying to kill him.
Yeah.
Just a lot of bad parental figures on the outside of it. I mean, we have the Emperor to Hunter.
I mean, every animated show children has to have, like, because if the children have to do the work, the parents have to be bad, I feel like is the rule.
That's true, but then, like, it is not the case with Ida, right?
Yeah, but...
And that's a refreshing take.
Yeah.
I felt like it was a really, really good take, and having... And we have, like, Camilla, who is a single parent who lost her husband when her kid was very young, right? We have really good presentation of parents who care and try.
Yeah.
And do a good job of it, too. Maybe not the best... We know that she wanted to send her daughter away to camp to make sure that she's, like, around normal kids, quote-unquote. And we know that Ida is constantly struggling with being a parent. But it's such small things that, like, overall, these are good parents. And they don't make the show less interesting. I think we need more of that, to be honest. Because I'm kind of, like, it's too predictable to have a parent who's kind of not paying attention that much so that the kids can do whatever they want. Look how much depth it added to the cartoon.
Yeah. I mean, and there's a lot of that with, like, the parents trying to protect the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So.
My God, Rain just constantly helping Ida because they know Rain. That, yeah, because they know that Ida yeah. has kids and they don't want her to, like, to die. That's, it's
when are
so
we
going to cool.
get the Ida Rain kiss? Like, a
I
big
want
kiss.
It. We're going to get it.
I want it so bad. Okay, it better happen.
We're going to get it.
Because they're so good together.
Even if they don't kiss, there's so much there and it's so complex and complicated that I'm satisfied. But we're going to get it.
And I think that will be the first, like, kiss between, like, anyone and a non-binary character in any, like, children's show or really any form of, like, show that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So that will be a big milestone if they do that.
It'd be pretty cool.
See if Disney are not cowardly. See if they'll do it.
I think the animators will do it.
Yeah.
They did the Lumity kiss.
Which was very steamy.
Was it?
It was not a children's peck, show. That was a very confident kiss for a children's show.
It was
show.
Great. It was just a good scene altogether.
And that they commented on it and that, like, it wasn't just like a, I don't know, like, the thing I always think about when there's a kiss scene in a show or a movie is, like, could they cut this out? Because they often do that, you know, like, for audiences in, like, China and whatnot, they'll cut out any kind of LGBT reference. And it feels like this kiss is not something they could cut out. And to me, that makes it important.
It's very much a part of the scene.
Yes.
Like, integral to what's happening. Yeah, the cast on this show really thought things through. And
yeah.
have been showing their salt through the animation. And doing a really good job of it overall. Just like,
that would be
I've
the
truly
crew,
had...
not the cast, but yes.
Oh, I thought I said crew. They did a good job. I'm just... really happy that they managed to do this sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think this season, yeah, it's really, really great. I don't know. I'm trying to think if I have any criticisms of it, because that's where we started on, like, 15 minutes ago. It does feel a little breathless at points, I think, and that's always a necessity. I mean, like, Korra had the same thing, and we talked about how they actually did a really good job of giving characters time, but, like, as always, I just want more, and I want the 20 episode diversion. Alas, we yeah. cannot live in that world, because it just reminds me of, like, how much time, like, because, like, I think about, like, the first Avatar The Last Airbender, where, like if this were as long as that, we wouldn't just get a, you know, Rain episode, we'd get, like, three or four Rain episodes, or, like, there wouldn't just be an episode exploring the dynamics of Amity's family, but we get, like, lots of scenes over the course of the entire season, and altogether it would be explored in a ton of detail. But that was the perks of, you know, The Last Airbender having, I don't know, what is this, like, 26 episodes a season or something like that, something crazy.
Yeah, they had the time that this show deserves to have.
Yeah, but the show is not lesser for it. It's just, like, my desire for more, as always, yeah. cannot be sated.
And but I want yeah. more Collector.
That oh, yeah.
little guy is awesome.
Who's the voice actor for the Collector?
The voice actor for the Collector is Frida Wolf.
Okay, because they sounded very familiar. Do I know them from something?
I feel like yes.
IMDb. Okay, they were in Bugsnacks.
What is that?
It's just a kind of meme-y video game. Oh, they were in Cyberpunk. Okay, they've been. Oh, they were in Kipo and the Age of Wonder Beasts. That makes sense.
Ooh.
And
who do they voice?
Dahlia.
That tells me nothing. I saw that show way too long ago.
Yeah, same. I feel like there's something I know them from, though. That, like, I'm just going to see it. I'm going to be like, yes, that's the one I know them from. Know her from. Oh, they were freaking Sarah Ryder.
Oh!
From Andromeda.
Okay. That's why it's familiar.
Okay. Like, they were Sarah super, Ryder. Super, super, they were the voice of Sarah Ryder, Mass Effect Andromeda, which, you know, all feelings about Mass Effect Andromeda aside. Okay, that is okay. That is why her voice was so familiar. I know you do. You're the like one person in the world.
It was very nostalgic, and I had a lot of fun, and it was a 20 hours well spent. Anyway.
Yes. Anyway. Okay, so now that we saw it, I feel like we're running out of time. Yeah, the collector is wonderful. I look forward to seeing how this show ends. I wish it had more time, but like, all good things must pass.
Mm-hmm.
And any final thoughts on Owl House Season 2?
No. Ranted about Disney. Talked about the show. Check, check.
Yep, we offended anyone who's a conservative Christian, which I'm sure there are plenty of you listening to our lesbian media podcast. Yeah, well,
you know, if more of them listen, it'll be an easier pass for Disney.
We're just humans. Yeah. We're just humans who just want to see ourselves represented in a show. Cool. Thank you everyone for tuning in. Just to plug our social media, we've got a Twitter, an Instagram, and a Pinterest. It is @InMediaLez. We have a subreddit, r/InMediaLez. Our website is InMediaLez.com, and you can email us at InMediaLez@gmail.com. If you email us a question or comment, we'd be happy to like give you a shout out or answer your question on one of our episodes. Thank you for rating, subscribing, doing anything you can to tell people about our show. We really appreciate it, and we love to hear from you and interact with you. So thank you, everyone.
Yeah, and we'll see you in the next one.
Have a good one. Bye.